name's Aaron Ryan. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio.
And my name's Bill Cundiff. Whoa, I'm kind of loud there, Trav. Got a lot of
volume. Take your vitamins this morning?
Yes, I did.
Good job.
Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they've got big inventory of tractors, implements, mowers, zero turns. They got it all up there. Go up and see them. Spring's coming. It's right around the corner. Guys, I think it's here today. Got to be 75 out there this morning.
I know. It was balmy.
Yeah, very balmy. And they're also a Honda generator dealer. They're also a steel power products dealer. You can go by and get your new chainsaws, weed whacker, hedge trimmers, anything steel. They probably got it in stock. They got a big inventory of steel right now. So go by and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Not to be confused with the inventory to steal.
No.
Somebody got that confused.
Yeah, somebody was confused.
Somebody was confused by that a couple weeks ago. We hope it didn't come from, you know.
It was an after hours.
Any word fumbling on our part.
Yeah. It was an after hours credit issue.
a 3 a.m. credit issue.
Yeah.
If it's 3 o'clock and you feel like you need to steal products, don't do it. Oh, my goodness. All right. So today is January 17th, 2021, in case we air this again in the future. And not to put too fine a point on it, but there is some amazing stuff on the website today. I put all sorts of stuff that I'm sure we'll talk about and other things that I think you'll find very illuminating. We have two guests with us. Our first guest is Congressman Doug LaMalfa. You can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us. You can find his bio. He represents the 1st Congressional District, the 11 far northern California counties, except for the coast. And he did a one-minute floor speech. I won't spoiler alert that anyway, but we're going to play it for you. And I have it on good authority that it lit the phones in his offices on fire. So that's always good, you know, when you can incense the entire left side of the country with a 60-second speech, man. That's 60 seconds well spent. Doug, how's it going today?
Pretty good. I get enjoyment out of hearing your analysis of that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny because people think, oh, a one-minute speech. I mean, really, what are you going to talk about? And, you can get a lot done in a minute.
Like, if you're concise and know what you're talking about a little bit and have maybe a little bit of a passion behind it, it can go well. So,
yeah, feeling a little annoyed.
Just a little annoyed with what's going on, yes. So, whether it's coming from over the internet or the fish wrap that they call newspapers around here, it does motivate you.
Yeah, who would have thought? I think we all know journalism's mostly, I shouldn't say it's dead, because there are some people who still can write. Our friend Liz Bowen always does a very nice job up there in Siskiyou County, but I'll tell you what, some of our local papers, they feel like they just need to tell people what to think. You know? We're just going to tell you what to think.
You kind of expect that when you're going to get a story or maybe even an editorial that they're going to talk to both sides of the issue, you know, and speak to people on both sides in order to form an informed opinion. Or when it's not the editorial page, which a lot of times is confused with the front page by editors and publishers these days.
Yeah, they tend to overlap. Do you want us to, should we play your 60 seconds and then kind of go from there?
It's up to you.
It's 12:09. Yeah, let's do that. Let's play that fun 60 seconds. We'll take a really swift break right on the backside and come right back with you. Could do that a little early so we don't have to take a bunch of breaks.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second annual Impeachment Show Extravaganza, brought to you by the censors and left-wing media, the fact-checked ministers of shutdown and big tech, and the Democrat Party. Today, the second annual impeachment of President Trump isn't really about actual words spoken out of rally. No. This is all about, Madam Speaker, the unbridled hatred of this president. You use any extreme language and any process to oppose the core of what he has really fought for. You hate him because he is pro-life. strongest ever. You hate him for fighting for the freedom of our religion to not be persecuted by unfair mandates and limitations on speech. You hate him for not subscribing and shackling us with the religion of climate change and one-sided Paris Accords. You hate him for Israel. You hate him for defending our borders. You hate him for letting families and small businesses keep what they earn, for trying to keep the agents of government off their back. You hate him for putting America first, which is what I thought we'd do when we swear the oath. No, this shabby show isn't about a threat to our republic. This is the impeachment and muting of at least half of the American people. This is shameful and abuse of a process.
The gentleman's time has expired. The gentleman from New York.
I yield the gentleman additional 20 seconds.
The gentleman from Ohio yields you another
Madam Speaker,
20 seconds.
I pray people of all stripes wake up to this spectacle and exercise their rights to put a stop to it through free speech and through fair elections.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Make a supersonic man out of you. Don't stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you want to have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
Cause I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
now. Yes,
I'm
having a good time. I don't want to stop at all.
So since you got reelected, I thought that was probably a good song. So even though they're mad, they can't do anything about it for 2 years. So after the Ring of Fire, what was the, what was the reaction back there? Was it kind of like, hey, nice going?
Oh, on one side of the room was nice going, and there was glares from the other side of the room. I'll let you figure out what the sources of those two.
Well, that's how you always know you're doing a good job.
Well, like they say in NASCAR, you know, if you're not rubbing, you're not racing. Which,
yeah, there you go.
I thought it was, if you're not first, you're last.
That's Ricky Bobby.
Oh, that's Ricky Bobby, okay.
You got that confused with Talladega Nights.
You always want to be first in a listen. Police doesn't typically get you much, except for those tiered elections they have in New Hampshire or something. But anyway.
Well, so, you know, for people, explain. I know that you got, that Jim Jordan gave you a minute of his time. How does the time on something like the impeachment debate, who decides who gets to speak? Because I think sometimes people are mad that they didn't hear from one person or another, but that isn't really always their option, right?
Yeah, that's when a bill or issue resolution is being debated, there's an agreement among the leadership, or maybe some sides, depending on the level of totalitarianism, which it's actually getting worse on House rules for fairness to both sides. They've taken away some tools that we've always had in the past.
Like,
this is one's called the motion to recommit, which is generally the minority party's last shot at trying to add an amendment to a bill before it's voted on. So you'll see us put MTRs up to change the bill in some way. And a lot of times it is used as a tool to put the other side on record as being against some very basic issues. There might be, you know, a bill on crime, and we'll put in there something that says it should remain a felony to attack and harm a police officer. And so, you know, let's watch those other guys vote against that. They will, you know. So, it's, and they've taken away that MTR tool in this new Congress to at least have minority side be heard on a bill before it flies through. So when you're talking about time management on the floor, the on the impeachment vote, as I recall, it was 1 hour assigned to each side, meaning Dems and Reaps are the sides, as you talk about the proverbial aisle that you cross down the center. So Jim Jordan had an hour to manage, and the Dems had an hour to manage on their side. So basically, I've been talking with Jim a little bit lately here, and the day before on the 25th Amendment, he said, hey, Doug, you want to speak on this? I go, nah, not on that. I don't really have anything. on that. But then he asked me the next day, want to speak on this? Like, well, you know what? So I went into the cloakroom and tapped out a speech in about 10 minutes there and came out and said, well, I'd love a little bit of time, Jim. So they worked me in, and that's the result. So.
That was nice, because a lot of the response was, that's exactly what we were thinking. You know, I think you spoke for a lot of people in that instance, and it wasn't
well,
the usual.
I think we're out there listening to folks a lot, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, and the feedback comes in different ways within an in-person conversation or some of the letters and, well, a lot of communications we get. But I like to think that I got a fairly pulse on what reasonable people are thinking.
Yeah, there you go.
And, the ones that are out there playing by the rules and doing their part and doing all that. There's a lot of other people with opposite opinions, and I'm not very sure that they're as interested in playing by the rules that makes a successful society, but they're allowed their opinion. But I really felt like that was tapping into something that was not being said very much, at least in that venue, about, you know, as the content of the speech said, this isn't so much about someone's perception or twisting of the words said at a rally. This is a deep-seated thing going back four and a half years. You hate this man because he's been older and stronger on the issues listed than anybody has in a long time. Have you seen a more pro-life president ever? No.
No.
Have you seen one fight as hard for religious freedom and that expression ever? No. So,
well, he's the only person to, he's the only president to, I mean, under his, under the budget that was just passed, whether people loved it or hate it, and I did put an analysis that came from the Appropriations Committee on the website for today. So if you still think that the Republicans got rolled on that, I hope you really do go read through it, because that was basically a lie. There is no money in this next year for Planned Parenthood, and that's really a first.
That's a pretty big thing, you know. If and whether it's symbolic or whether it's, I mean, for the unborn lives that can be saved, it's a giant thing.
Yeah. So for all the people who didn't want their taxpayer money to go to Planned Parenthood, you got your wish and probably didn't even hear about it.
Yeah, and that's a difficult thing of when you do a giant omnibus spending bill, which was done the same time and day as a COVID relief bill, and had everybody just, so many people just upset on both sides, but especially, you know, some of our folks we hear from on the right-wing side of things saying that, how could you vote for this? This has got all these bad things. It doesn't have anything for COVID relief. And, you know, I mean, there's just a whole litany of issues that came out because of misunderstanding and the shoddy way the House is being run. I mean, we could have done the COVID relief bill as easily in August or September and had an idea of what to do right and what was needed then. Instead, it came down to December, what, 22? And the omnibus spending package, I hate to call it a spending package, but basically it is the funding of the government for another fiscal year. Well, that's due September 30th, and so we do these temporary measures called continuing resolutions, which kind of is a frozen snapshot of the current spending plan that was in place but expired on September 30th. So you might think, well, that's not so bad, right? It's not some newer, bigger thing. Yeah, maybe, except for you're frozen into a previous spending pattern that says, well, we're going to require this year that the military spend, you know, X amount of money painting the roofs red and all the buildings. Like, well, when you keep extending that spending plan, the company say, well, we've already painted all the roofs red. Okay, now we have to go paint them over again. We have to, you know, give them a different hue. And I'm making a silly analogy here, but it's, you're stuck into the spending pattern of things that are now no longer applicable. And if we went through a better process on that, we would be saying, oh, or listening to them say, well, can we move the funding over here? Or can we stop funding that and we'll come back if we need something new later? You know, but that's what you lose with the CR. So I got a little heat for voting for that package. And but what you have to remember, this is the last Trump package, okay? This is the last Trump spending plan that His guys are right at the table, too. Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin was right there and said, these are the things that we can agree to. It isn't what everybody would want on, you know, maybe the Republican side, but this is what we've hammered out. You know, Pelosi's got her pound of flesh and Schumer and the others, so we can live with this. And that's what we voted for. And so some things happened after the vote that put some of us in a bad appearance, but I didn't agree that we needed to send out $2,000 checks, for example, without it. I mean, at the very least, whatever checks you're sending out have to have a lot stronger criteria as for who's getting them, because you got people that are that were receiving them that are not unemployed or they weren't working to begin with. They weren't in a position where they need the aid as compared to the people that really do, who had their hours cut but are still maybe just outside of being able to be on unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot more complexity to what we're voting on than just, you know, what someone might type out on their social media and attack you with.
Well, people were told, I included, just so you know, I included the letter you put out right around Christmas that went into some detail on this. And, you know, in the political realm, it's a kind of a common, I guess it's kind of like parenting, right, when you're explaining you're losing. So the prevailing sentiment is, oh, just leave it alone. The media will move on to something else and people will forget about it. And
no.
You didn't want to move on and wrote an extensive explanation of what happened with the funding, which I think people would enjoy reading. And in there, just like the explanation of what that package included, 33% was the omnibus budget, 11% was coronavirus aid, and 56% of what you voted on, that just volume of pages, 3,100 pages to be exact, was other legislative bills that had not gone through yet. So maybe tell people why that would all be included in, like, a single vote.
Well, it's the, whether you call it convenience or packaging, or we're running out of time in that Congress. You know, the Congress expired on January 2, and we have to get this work done. You know, we had the continuing resolutions, the temporary spending measures. We were adding, you know, a week at a time or 3 days at a time, even 24 hours at a time of keeping the funding going, all right? And so it gets ridiculous. So the opportunity to get this all done was just winding down to a couple days before Christmas. It all got shoved together, all the leftover legislation that had maybe passed bipartisanly in the House or had come from the Senate that just hadn't gotten around being done yet because, you know, we spent most of the year staying away because of their interpretation of what we need to do with the virus and attendance and all that. I mean, you know, this year, the first time, an unprecedented way of doing business is that we would vote by proxy. The Democrats put that through. We could vote by not being there. So you could designate a colleague who is there and, you know, give them a letter and say, and that's what you see, is that the one present would step to the microphone and there's some legal language said, but on behalf of so-and-so from California, I cast a vote no against this bill. Now, I didn't subscribe to that because I think it's important that we show up. And, you know, I go back to the founders who had to ride, you know, a couple, 3 days on horse and buggy or what have you to get to the Capitol and do their work. And I think that was actually a good firewall of them not doing too much work, you know, spending too much time thinking things up. And, you know,
it's a long horse ride. Do you really want to make it?
Yeah. Do you really want to get there and get rid of the gender terms in the House rules package? Is that what you want to ride 3 days for? You know, so
hard pass.
It was probably a good limitation on having what used to be maybe part-time legislature. So anyway, there's a lot of reasons why things end up the way they do, and the pressure of the government running out of funding and running out of the session for the year. Didn't really want to get that knocked over into a new Congress and have to, you know, take 3 or 4 weeks of revamping all that. So the package, you know, it did, as you mentioned, did have a lot of catch-all of legislation that had been bipartisan agreement upon, in the House or the Senate. And it's an ugly way of doing business, and that's what happens when you can't get along as well or be productive in conversation. And that's the sad thing, if you want to drill on that proxy voting and Zoom way of doing committees. You know, I mean, we're not even in the same room for committee hearings. And
makes it pretty hard to get on the same page.
It is. You have your witnesses that would come in, and we can ask them and question them in person instead of a, you know, two-inch square on a computer. It's just not the same. You don't get the passion. You don't get the interaction that's necessary to really get a good line of questioning out. And we all know it's easy to get distracted away from a Zoom meeting anyhow. If you're, you know, you're home, you might maybe have your, you know, dress shirt and tie and jacket on. You might be wearing jammies on the bottom, but it's just not a good way of doing business. And this COVID deal has been manipulated to do a lot of things that are stealing our liberties right now. And I don't know where the train ends on this, especially, I know we're deviating here a little bit, but when the vaccine still has all the same restrictions after you take it on how you act and what you go and what you do, I'm just wondering, like, where is the end of this game for these people? So
yeah. Well, and it has a lower efficacy rate than the survival rate of the virus, so that's a little weird, too.
I saw a little math play on that. If you're 99.7% chance of not dying from the virus and the vaccine is 70% effective, that means you have 167% chance, 159% chance of not dying from it, right? Whatever it is.
Yeah. So. I kind of like the picture of the Munsters, for those of us who remember the Munsters, and
What was
her name? Lily? I think her name was Lily, the blonde-haired gal that was the only one who had, like, flesh-toned skin. Everybody else obviously looked like the Munsters. They had white skin and dark, you know, super dark hair. But let's see the caption. When the whole family got the coronavirus vaccine except you.
Yeah.
Of course, we won't know if that's real until later, but it would be kind of scary if the Munsters was also prophecy. It seems like there are a lot of things from our childhood that have turned out to be somewhat prophetic. Yes, but I digress.
I spent a little time having to update the next generation is what the Munsters is. Or
yeah, that's a problem, too.
I had some that hadn't heard of Gilligan's Island, you know.
So. Ooh. How do you get any? You can't get any of the jokes.
No, you got to show them.
Now you got to explain it. So I know that people are one of the main reasons really I wanted you to come on today was, you know, it seems like the prevailing sentiment is always to keep everybody afraid and off balance and demoralized. And so it's pretty easy to do that to, we'll say not Democrats, because they're not all Republicans, but maybe people who are just not Democrats are excited about where we're going with them. What do you see for the House? Like, you know, they're telling folks that, oh, they're going to take away your Second Amendment rights, all your, you know, I mean, they're predicting all these things that are going to happen.
Gun control.
In reality, I mean, obviously, you know, the Munsters was prophecy, we're not. But, you know, what do you see going forward? What's the lay of it to you?
Well, the federal government, you know, our federal system there of the House, the Senate, the White House, and, well, in a way, the Supreme Court. But the legislative activity is going to mirror California a lot more than it has recently, you know, and we know in California there's nothing that they won't propose, that they won't pass, that you can't embarrass them, you can't shame them. And so crazy ideas are going to come from the legislature body in the House, probably most likely in the Senate to an extent too. And, you know, we have to hold on and kind of, the election's every 2 years. I'm elected for 2 years. And so it's a bite-sized situation of survival right now on a two-year cycle. And we also want to be thinking long-term, obviously, about doing great things for infrastructure and putting things in place that would have jobs and manufacturing stay and locate in this country, and they know that they can be here for 30 years or 40 years and operate in a fashion that is predictable and profitable. So I just want to break this down to that for right now, where we are, we're in a, like in a foxhole for 2 years. And the more time they waste when it's the majority that we're going to oppose a lot of their stuff, I guess in a way helps run out the clock like a team with a four-point lead in the last 2 minutes and holding the ball, right? And on a football game. So you just want to get the clock run out until you can get the ball back or get on the field with a stronger team. And so the House is very close to being able to flip to a Republican majority. The Senate, as you see, is 50-50 after that debacle in Georgia here a couple weeks ago where we lost somehow both of those seats. We just picked off one, we'd have 51, and they wouldn't be we wouldn't be looking at a Schumer majority leader and Kamala Harris, Lord help us, as a deciding tiebreaker. So what we're looking at is hunkering down, getting through the 2 years, and flipping very possibly both houses. I think the Dems have a lot more seats to defend in the Senate than the Republicans do. And you know, so you're saying to yourself, well, that means elections. We don't have any faith that elections are going to be fair anymore. There's a lot of that being talked about, too, I'm sure you're hearing, because, you know, the conversation ever since the November 3 election and right up through the 6th when the electoral votes were certified by Congress is that what did go on these elections? How can we have confidence where, you know, did the president overwhip some of the stuff that happened? Yeah, probably. Someone was overhyped. But there are legitimate questions that need to be asked and have been asked to an extent, and I don't think we're adequately answered for us in Congress or in the minds of the general public, you know. So the rally in D.C. kind of played into that. Many Americans are not satisfied that they've gotten the answer that, oh, the elections are perfect, they're fine, there's no high level of fraud. Well, if you want to set that portion aside, we do know from the Texas lawsuit that got, you know, this dismissed because of standing, because of eligibility for those to bring the suit, that there were some issues with the way elections were conducted in Pennsylvania and a couple of the other states where to make a law or change an existing law requires a legislative action. That means you're at the state level is what we're talking about. So your state assembly, your state senate, and a governor's signature to change. Take, for example, in Pennsylvania, something called Act 77. It prescribed that all votes have to be turned in by 8 p.m. to election places, election officials, 8 p.m. on election night. A court just came in and said, we're going to add 3 days. So a court just waved a wand. That's not how you legislate. In other cases, you have secretaries of state, governors, or election commissions just making rules. So that's the crux of what the lawsuit was about, and I think that's legitimate. But if you read the press, you read crappy editorials, you'd see that, this is sedition. This is undermining democracy. This is setting aside the election. Like, well, those are flaws with how they were put together. Does that mean, you know, any of those things? No, I think it's our duty to do that. And that's part of what was going on January 6th when those electors were to be certified.
Well, the other part of that, too, that the media didn't really report is Pennsylvania sent Congress a letter on Monday the 4th and said, hey, don't take in our electors. We've got problems. This is the list of the things we'd like to fix before you guys do that. So for all the people out there who say that...
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that because we got it from their state senate.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have a Republican majority in that senate and their lower house, too. And I think that's part of the reason why their governor and others acted the way they did and said, well, hey, we want to send in mail-in ballots to everybody in Pennsylvania and have no accountability for whether the recipient is dead or alive, whether the address is still valid, whether legal immigrants or what. We just want to send them out. Well, a Republican legislature is not going to just put that out without, you know, some guardrails, if you want to, so to speak, on that. they would have required something a little tighter on that if we're going to have the mail-in ballots because everybody's scared of COVID, right? So that's why they did it by executive action, and that's why we believe that, yes, that is a perfectly good reason. So when we got that letter from the state legislature, which was basically asking for what Ted Cruz had proposed, how about a 10-day timeout? We in Congress will sit down, a bipartisan group, commission, along with five members of the Supreme Court, and weed through this stuff. Because, well, why are you doing it at the last minute? Why didn't you do it before the election, make a change? Or why didn't you do it just right after the election? Because there wasn't time to gather that information. More and more came out. Like in a big trial of the century type deal, you wouldn't have people hustling to get the verdict in. You would allow for discovery and interviewing witnesses and having a long deliberation when you're doing something major like that. So it took time for this to come together, and finally the Pennsylvania State Legislature said, we've got some big problems we really discovered here in the last couple, 3 weeks, and we're asking you and the Congress to hold off that electoral tally for an additional 10 days and take a harder look at this. That's what that all was. But you would think from the nonsense being put out by the editors and in the paper in Reading and in Chico and everybody up and down the media chain here that we were somehow seditionists is one of their favorite words. Like, no, we're asking a legal question, and that's our job to do. And then you want to tack onto that the break into the Capitol on the 6th, where that was underway. You know, we had a two hours to debate on Arizona's electors, then the Pennsylvania one when we came back after work, came back to work after the lockdown. We debated those, and people are screaming, we can't believe after that all the, you know, the violence and stuff that you guys decided to still question the electors for the finish of the Arizona debate and the Pennsylvania one. Like, to me, that's just a mystery how you could think that way. So we're going to let a mob come in, no matter what the makeup of the mob is. Okay, we'll debate that later. The mob came in and tried to stop the people that work in the Capitol from doing their work. And so we're going to stop the work because, oh, the mob spoke. No. You suppress the mob, you get them out of there, and you go back and do the work you're supposed to do to begin with.
Yeah.
And for people to say, well, I'm going to pull off now. We're not going to do this because it caused tension. Well, wait a minute.
Well, you did have some people who did that, which I thought really said a lot about what they consider their job to be. But, you know, the thing that's interesting is two things that were really, I think, just promoted that were absolute lies. They said that you guys were voting to overturn an election, although that was never one of the options. And the other thing was that they tried to take over the government by going into the Capitol.
Called the rioters?
Yeah, they tried to take over the government. It's like, do you think the government lives in there in a box? I mean, what are you talking about? I mean,
don't think by occupying a building.
Yeah, how do you take over the government?
No, albeit a very hallowed building, one that deserves, you know, respect and has a long history that we revere. But by occupying that building does not mean that they have suddenly displaced all the elected members of Congress and are the government, you know?
Yeah, that was not one of the options. I don't think people really thought that through.
Haven't you ever heard of Capture the Flag?
That's totally what I thought of.
That's what I think it was.
I mean, I asked one lady, I said, so let's just pretend 1,000 armed people, because she's like, well, they were armed. I said, okay, 1,000 armed people go into the Capitol. Now, sketch for me how they take over the government from that position. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess they issued a voting card and they
at the door.
They get a special pin and an outfit and a chair and a desk.
Shucks, you guys have 1,000 here. I guess that's more than 435. So you're in charge now.
You win.
So
I just think it's something
that's why
that's
why there's secret bunkers for the Congress to retreat to if there's a time of a big enough crisis that you have to do that. So you have I'll put in quotes, functioning government.
Sure.
So,
but it's just something for people to consider that when you're told things like that, you really have to look at the source of where you're getting your information because they might actually either be liars or morons. Well, I guess they could be both.
Well, the Democrats have been a four-year against the president. That's what I was touching on in the speech you played at the beginning there.
Yeah.
And they hate him so bad, it doesn't matter. There's no cost that's too high for them. I think the ruined economy from their COVID treatment was a part of that package. And now all of a sudden, shazam, 5 days before the inaugural, you know, Governor Cuomo from New York, and I think the New York mayor, the Chicago mayor, we got to open these things up and save these businesses. do you think we're not paying attention?
Yeah.
And they're banking on that because voters don't seem to pay attention in some cases.
Well, I guess that's why I think it's important for people to understand things like the vote last December. I really hope people go and look at the letter you wrote that kind of unpacks what they were looking at so they can realize how much they were lied to, because it's going to happen again. I mean, I'll say it. You don't have to agree with me, but just my observation. We have Mrs. DeLauro in charge of Rosa DeLauro in charge of appropriations this year. So I'm kind of thinking the crazy lady with the purple hair, who kind of looks like she might be a crazy lady with purple hair, might not be the most studious choice for appropriations. So I look at that and I think, okay, so they're not planning on getting anything done. And if appropriations don't go through, welcome to another omnibus bill, end of the year, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's worth it for voters to get involved.
CRs until you get the omnibus, if you do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the CRs don't have to end on December 22. They can go into the next year. And
right.
You just can't go into a new Congress in a new session, but...
For
your folks that happen to be Democrat that listen here, I don't believe that the ones that get elected or the ones that run things at the high echelon of the party are the same as rank and file regular Democrat people that live in our district across the country. Like, you know, we can disagree at a cafe over a cup of coffee, piece of pie, or whatever. But most of them, I think most people that they choose their party are somewhere not as wound as tightly as the fringes on either side, you know, and the fringes are the ones that broke into the Capitol, whether they were folks that were identifying as Trump supporters but are something much worse, or the ones that were taking advantage of the mayhem that might have been masked over Antifa. You know, this is all still coming out.
If I was an Antifa guy, I'd be wearing a Trump hat and sitting in front waiting for the riot to start. I mean, that would be super smart. We do have to take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back. But I just had to kind of chuckle that you also took some heat this week because you were having a snack, drinking some water, sitting in a corner during the evacuation, and wearing a mask. So we have a good song for that. We're just going to answer it with music, and let that go, because masks are not the law. Newsflash, masks are not the law. So you're listening to We the People. We will be right back with Congressman Doug LaMalfa, and you can find all the information we've been referencing at wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't need you to worry for me, because I'm all right. I don't want you to tell me it's time to come home. This is my life. Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. Never said you had to offer me a second chance.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys. You gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
As it should be.
As it should be.
As it should be. we don't have to talk about the mask thing. I just thought it was funny, and it's amazing the things that people get hysterical about, because, again, the media didn't bother to highlight that Nancy Pelosi brought two members of Congress back from her party so that she could win the speaker's chair, and they were in quarantine for COVID, and then some Democrats, I guess, got the virus, which I don't know if you can get it that fast, but whatever. You were eating goldfish in a corner, and somehow you caused an outbreak. It's like,
talk about the timeline here. On January 3, Sunday, we were brought in for, you know, organizing the House. So okay. I'll put that in quotes, too. And, you know, you vote for the speakership, and you put the rules in place. So she was concerned that it was going to be a narrow margin for her getting her speakership. So somehow or another that a couple members that were COVID positive were encouraged to come in and be part of the speaker vote. And so they made a little open top plexiglass booth up in the gallery, the floor above the House floor, you know, where you observe from upstairs, like in a theater, you know, or something. And they made a glass booth that was open over the top. And it's kind of like, you know, a drum set in church, you know, that the drummer, they put him in a plexiglass cage. So it was kind of like that. So they were up there. I wasn't aware of it at the time when we were doing the votes. You find out about this stuff later, you know. So I don't know if I would have wanted to be in the room had I known about that. They didn't disclose that to us members, right? So I wanted to, you know, play.
Well, they never disclosed it at all. I mean, you were Typhoid Mary, but it turns out the two members, just in case somebody thinks I'm making this up, were Frederica Wilson and Tim Ryan. So you can, and I'm sure that they got there in a plastic bubble.
I think one of them was Gwen Moore, I think. But anyway, there's stories about that. So
yeah, they just didn't tell people that. They basically said, oh, somebody wasn't wearing a mask, therefore people got sick. And
the next part, yeah. So that was the third on the swearing in. Two known positive members were up there. I think I saw a photo later of one of them actually not being up there, but was sitting in the front row later on.
Terrific.
So a couple days later, on the 6th, Wednesday, you know, when the Capitol break-in occurred and we were all ushered into a different part of the complex to, you know, wait out what was going on, Democrats and Republicans all got, you know, that were in there all got pushed into this one big room. And so once everybody was settled in and people got into their corners and their little people, groups they were going to hang out and chat with or whatever, that's what was going on. Some of them chose at that point not to wear masks. The Dems that are all paranoid and want to be Karens about it, they could be across the room and choose what they wanted to do. But one of them decided, let's take a video of one of the Dems offering masks to those Republicans in the corner. Well, I was actually a little more by myself sitting at a table, as you alluded to. They had brought us some snacks in, like we had the orange goldfish crackers and a bottle of water. So I was just settled in and munching on a few crackers and drinking a water. It's exactly like flying the airplane. You know, on United, we're to sit in our seats with our mask on until they bring you a snack. You know, about partway into the flight. And so you can take your mask off and munch your crackers and drink your water, and then when you're done, you have to put it back on.
Because you're not contagious. When you're eating and drinking, you're not contagious. We learned that in restaurants.
That's right.
Yeah.
In restaurants, if you're sitting down, you're not contagious either.
You can't sit inside the restaurant, but they can build a tent. They can go rent a tent and put all that stuff up outside. You can sit in that tent outside and eat. And it's the logic has gone out the window a long, long time ago, and you know, Dr. Fauci, the minister of propaganda on that, has changed his mind 6 different times and all that. So, you know, that's you know, when you drill down to the aggravation people are having,
yeah,
people are tired of getting lied to. They're tired of getting manipulated. They're tired of being told something by somebody who isn't logical.
Yeah,
that they can't do it. I know you got a big uprising up there in Shasta County with people with the supervisors and such, and they, you know, they took all the chair seating, you know, the bottom half of the chair out of the room there in the supervisor's chambers. Like, who's paying people to do that? You know, they could,
so no one can sit down.
I'm just running out of words and a way to describe what goes on here. So, yeah, so they made a big spectacle of us sitting in that room under being sequestered away from what's going on. They said, hey, let's have a mask fight over this. And they made a video of it. And so, and they're, at the same time, they're saying, we need to have unity and get along. And they do a gotcha like that, trying to set people up.
Yeah,
of course,
right.
The media runs right with it. They don't They don't mention what you're talking about. They had two known positive members in the room, in the chamber.
Yeah, and Gwen Moore. So. Gwen Moore was one of them. I have the wrong name here. But yeah, she comes from Wisconsin. How did she get there? She had to go there in a. I'm guessing she went there in an airplane.
Oh, I'm sure she went by horseback. So.
The 3-day ride.
You just have all sorts of disingenuous coming out of it. The media reports one side of it. And like, oh, look how irresponsible I have. I was just doing what I was doing, and the other members around me just hanging out. And so, and besides that, none of us actually have the virus, unlike the ones Mrs. P brought in to have to secure her speaker's election. So, you know, you tell me.
Well, I think this year is going to be full of that. And people are going to have to be really discerning, I think, on, because, okay. I know there's an expression, they call them messaging bills, where, you know, they just want to tell it, because a lot of people don't realize it has to, a bill has to pass the House and the Senate both, and then be signed by the President. So if they pass something crazy through the House, it often gets reported, oh, this just passed, and then everybody's hair lights on fire. How much of that do you think we're going to see this year?
Oh, plenty. You know, I get messages all the time about, you know, a gun bill that's been hanging out there for a year or so, and people are still wondering what happened to that bill. Well, that's, you know, bill number 5717. That bill died when the Congress ended, but now you can expect the same or more to come in the new Congress, because they got their president. They're feeling their oats right now, and they have a Senate that's 50-50, that if you can get something through somehow, Kamala will be the tie-breaking vote. So, if we talked a little bit earlier about, is there anything we can look forward to? Is there any hope in all this? And that it's a 2-year cycle, so we hold our breath 2 years, and also that the firewall, there is still firewalls, and Mrs. Pelosi, once they've done, you know, counting the votes in the 22nd district in New York, they're still counting them. Claudia Tenney, a friend of mine, is holding on to about 20 vote lead until they change the rules on how you count them. We're going to be at 222 to 213, I think, is how that's going to settle out. Now, some of the Dems are getting names of administration, so they're going to lose some numbers. So they might be down to maybe 219. That's a 6-vote difference. It only takes 3 to make a tie vote. So the crazier their bills they put out, the more it's going to put their more moderate members on ice to have to vote for really bad, crazy bills in a moderate district. Some of the districts that maybe Trump won in 16, or maybe even currently, and they're going to overreach, because AOC and those folks have major influence on the direction of their party and their policy. So that there's that, and I got to be quick here, but on the Senate side too, Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia, who sometimes you can get a little help from.
Yep.
He has promised not to vote with the Dems to get rid of the cloture vote or the filibuster, the ability to take. There's a 60-vote requirement to move legislation to end debate, as they call it. And so that's been a good firewall for the minority party. He's not going to join them to give them a tie-breaking situation to get rid of the filibuster, at least that's what he says. So it's going to take a lot of effort for the Dems to get things through the Senate. On the occasions they do have a 51-vote ability to do so. That's usually just around the budget. So that's a pretty good firewall there, I think. It's a decent one. It ain't going to be great. And you're going to hear, as you said, that so votes are going to pass the House saying, oh, my gosh, we're done for. Like, well, there still is a firewall in the Senate somewhat.
Sure.
And in 2 years. And then they have to be afraid of what they're voting on, too. Because, there's all seats and states that we would hope to hold, and we should hold, probably. And they're going to have a bigger challenge this year, because there's, I think, a lot more Dems and Republicans up at 22 for Senate seats.
Well, that's good.
So they still have to look over their shoulder on this a little bit. So I'm not trying to say, hey, everything's rosy and good.
No, but they have an uphill run. And in the meantime, I would certainly hope that Republicans don't start a circular firing squad, that we focus on actually where, who the problem is.
We've got to watch the Romneys and the other guys that think they're the smartest person in the room and they're going to be above it all. Like, no, we're in the trenches here. So when you talk about the legislative side, the House and the Senate, and how they pass things, that's one thing. The stuff that's going to come down from the administration and their cabinet and the people they appoint and the ones that get confirmed.
Yeah, that's going to be
where we got to. That's where I'm.
The good part is they're the same bureaucrats from Obama. Congressman Doug LaMalfa, thank you for being with us this morning. We think you're an all-star, and we thought we'd play a song about that. We'll be right back with our next guest. We're here on for another hour.
Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.